The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts today, Grant Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. It was a memorable weekend for college football fans and college basketball fans in the state of Alabama and in the state of Mississippi. So we'll go through those games that happened. So, Grant, let's start off with the college basketball game of the weekend. The Auburn Tigers take down number 4 Houston, 74-69. What are your thoughts on Auburn thus far in two games into the season?
Well, they have the best resume in college basketball through the first week, and it's not particularly close. I think the only one that's close is Gonzaga. But this Auburn team is showing you why they are one of the best teams in the country. They're absolutely phenomenal on the defensive end. Jani Broome showing you why he's a preseason All-American. Todd Pettiford with that incredible game against Houston after not scoring against Vermont. Obviously, Miles Kelly against Vermont, just the downpour of threes, went 7 of 9 from three. This Auburn team has a little bit of moxie to them. And I think, and this is all speculation, I think that it is the fact that this team is full of 11 seniors and two very talented, one's a five-star freshman who just came off of an embarrassing first-round loss a season ago in the tournament. Most of those guys returned. Some of them didn't. And this team's got a little moxie to them. Obviously, you had the playing situation where Ja'Kai Howard and Jaheim Hudson got into in Jeff Goodman's words, a horseplay fight on the airplane, had to turn around a private aircraft, which definitely costs over, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 just to do, and then fly a different aircraft to Houston later that night. It does sound like this Auburn team has some dogs on this team off the court and on the court. And they're going to continue to show it through that absolutely brutal non-conference schedule. Obviously, they're going to have the Maui Invitational coming up, then Duke and Purdue and Ohio State, and then you get into the meat of that really good SEC schedule. So I'm really excited. This team, and the number one in KenPom right now, this team has a chance to really be something special, but obviously it is early. So just excited about them moving forward.
Better than Auburn football is going for you,
Greg. No doubt. Auburn fans deserve this. Auburn fans deserved Saturday night, the win over Houston, and even the Vermont win last Wednesday, because it has been a miserable football season and really just miserable football last half a decade. But glad basketball is back, and Bruce Pearl is the savior of Auburn sports.
Who hits 5 wins first, Auburn basketball or Auburn football?
I definitely don't think Auburn hits 5 wins in football at all. So I'm going to go basketball.
All right, Nathan, let's talk about the Alabama basketball team here. Two games, had a big blowout win over UNC Asheville, and then had a pretty big scare against Arkansas State and former assistant Brian Hodgson. What are your thoughts on the basketball team thus far?
Oh, you had two completely opposite games, in my opinion. You look at the first game, really drive heavy. Your first thought was to run to the basket and then kick the ball out. That was where most of our threes came from. Only attempted 18 in that game. I think that was a big difference from what we saw last year. Very three-point oriented team. A lot more driving, but they still managed to put up a lot of points. I played really solid defense, especially in the second half. And I saw a lot of terrific things from a lot of different guys. The scoring was pretty spread out. And that was a great start to the season. And then on Friday, rough shooting night. Defense was there. It was very physical. Both teams fouling a lot. It was a free throw contest. And really what it came down to is Alabama just having to out talent Arkansas State, and a lot of credit goes to Arkansas State and what Hodgins was able to do and to prepare him to go into Tuscaloosa to really battle against that team. Because no doubt they are very, very physical, and they had a great game plan going into it. But Alabama, eventually, shots will drop. They had good looks. It just wasn't their night. And that's just one thing that comes with college basketball. It's a game of runs, a game of opportunities. And sometimes you can't convert on every single opportunity.
Well, just like with Auburn, Alabama has a brutal non-conference, and it'll be important for this team to get tested early on. Just like the team last season dropped a few games here and there early on to ranked opponents. But when we saw later in the season, the team was tested. And when they played tougher opponents later in the season, they were prepared for it. And that's what Auburn and Alabama were hoping to do with those very difficult non-conference schedules going forward. Let's change gears from basketball to football now. Auburn was off, so we don't have anything to talk about there other than their team is terrible right now. Coaching's not very much better. But let's talk about Alabama, Nathan. They go into Baton Rouge at night and win 42-13. And it probably could have been 42-6 if Brian Kelly wasn't a nincompoop and decided he was going to keep his first team offense on the field the entire game. And after the game, Brian Kelly told reporters, if you're watching the game, you're like, what did these guys do for 2 weeks? So, Nathan, I'll pose that question to you. What did LSU do for 2 weeks? Because it looked like they did absolutely nothing to prepare for Jalen Milroe.
Oh, well, they had a plan in place, but it's the lack of execution on the defensive end that really took LSU out of the game. The number of times people played undisciplined, over-pursued, didn't play gap control, and really just took themselves out of plays. And, of course, Jalen Milroe, being a great quarterback that he is, took advantage of that. The blocking was tremendous from the Alabama offensive line. They were really the game changer. In this situation, I thought they really put the team on their back and really just controlled how the game went. You talked about the weather and how much it played a part and what happened. Didn't see a lot of passing. And when you did, the ball was slippery, wasn't able to be on target passes. There was a pass to Ryan Williams that generally would have been caught for a touchdown earlier on in the season if it's not raining. But that's just how it changes throughout the night with the bands of rain that came through. I was really impressed with Nick Sheridan's play calling. I thought establishing the running game was one of the big things they needed to come in there and do. And that's exactly what they did. Just absolutely impressed with the Alabama defense as well. Getting off the field on third downs, that was a huge thing for me. And we've talked about that throughout the entire season. They were able to execute when they needed to. Forced three turnovers in yet another game. I think that's another thing. So Kane Womack has had this defense prepare for the past three games, I would say. And he has done a fantastic job. Even going back to the South Carolina game, I know we gave him a lot of pushback for the way he called his games, but he's really made a drastic improvement in the past three games that they played. And really, it sets up Alabama to go forward and win out and make the playoff and even have themselves in SEC championship talks. I think you look at it for LSU as it sucks, but I didn't really consider LSU to be this top of the SEC really playoff team. I expected them to be more of a wild card that could have a great season, and they could have won a game like this and put themselves in a situation to make the playoffs. But obviously Saturday night, it didn't go their way. Brian Kelly, I think, needs to be more responsible with the way the team prepares. I thought there's a lot of distractions around the team this week. You talked about the live tiger in the stadium. I thought they did a great job of setting up the atmosphere, but they were more focused on that rather than actually playing the game of football. And that's what it came down to, them getting out physical in their own home. Fourth quarter, you could tell the entire stadium was empty except for the way fans cheering on their team. So, and that is something you never see in Death Valley.
Yeah, they rushed the parking lot a little early, Nathan. They didn't rush the field like another team in the Southeastern Conference. But you talk about the running game, Nathan. They kept the ball on the ground for more than 70% of the time for Alabama. Completely different script than what we saw a couple weeks ago when Jalen Milroe dropped back, I believe it was over 50 times to throw the football. And I know a lot of it has to do with the weather. It was raining a lot. But to see the offense have the ability to flip the script and run the football effectively, it is amazing for Alabama. Nick Sheridan did a great job here. Kane Womack did an amazing job. The defense was flying around. But one guy on defense that is now lost for the season is linebacker Q Robinson. And he's been one of, if not the best pass rusher this team has alongside Jahad Campbell. How does Alabama replace a guy like that and move forward?
Well, it's got to be the next man up mentality. The team is tremendously talented. You have five stars across the board. It's just guys got to step up and make plays. There is Pierre. You have Pierre who can definitely step up and really at the edge rushing position and really make plays. I've seen him do it before. Keanu Coe, I know he's had disciplinary issues. He was suspended the past weekend. I think he's got to get his mind right and really just put the team first rather than his own issues. But like I said, it's next man up. It's been that way since the start of time. And since we started playing football, you got to have people who want to make plays. I got to have people who are hungry. And I think there's multiple people on the roster that will want that opportunity. I will say a guy like that, I would say a great example, Bray Hubbard. stepping into the opportunity with Keon Sabb being out, and that's a huge loss. But Bray Hubbard instantly makes an impact in the last two games he's played, had an interception in both. I really think he's a tremendous ball hog. He played great run support. He really just showed how he's making the most out of the opportunity he was given. He was hungry to come out and make plays, and really had that Nets fan mentality. So there are multiple guys that can do it. I think Pierre will probably be the best one, in my opinion, Yozo Pierre. Like I said, I don't make the depth chart, so we'll have to wait and see.
So we talked about Alabama here, but what about LSU guys? I mean, this is both of y'all here. Both last year and this year, at Heisman winner, Jane Daniels last year. This year, you lose Daniels, but you still have a very talented quarterback in Nussmeier. And the defense has been much improved this season outside of really this game and their lackluster performance. But why can Brian Kelly not win in Baton Rouge?
That is really, really tough. I honestly think it's a little bit. Oh yeah, he's not that he doesn't have the talent. It's not that he doesn't have the not just the talent at the quarterback position, because Alex, you mentioned the Jaden Daniels and Grant Nussmeier being a veteran guy and a guy that's been at that place for a while, and he's got talent all over the place. And I know they're banged up, especially on the defensive end. They're banged up with some injuries to some key players, and in this game specifically, I think the weather had a major impact, because Alabama scored early and then LSU was playing from behind, and Grant Nussmeier threw 42 passes, which is more than 12 more than his average all year, even with the A&M game where they had the third, they were playing from behind as well in that one. It made Alabama more comfortable in the run game. It made LSU more pass heavy, which didn't work, especially in the weather. But the fact that Brian Kelly needs to win one of these big games. He's got the talent. It's not like he's in a rebuild. It's not like he's in a place where he inherited nothing. He inherited a team that was a year off the greatest season in college football history. So I don't want to hear any of the he inherited nothing, or he doesn't have the talent, or he doesn't have the coaching staff around him, because he does. And he's got one of the best home field atmospheres and advantages in the country. Why can't he win this big game? I know we can go and discuss each individual game and point to reasons why, but he does need to start winning these big games. I'm not saying he's on the hot seat. I'm not saying he should be fired. I'm not saying that LSU is going anywhere, because LSU is always going to have that talent. LSU is always going to have that pipeline. LSU is always going to have one of the best, if not the best, home field advantages there is. He needs to put up more points than the other team. And this he had a real chance to do that against this Alabama team, but Alabama jumped on them quick. It looked like this Alabama team came right from the first half against Georgia and traveled right into Baton Rouge. This did not look like the Alabama team we've seen the past few weeks in Knoxville or in Nashville or even at home against South Carolina. Not the same team. This is the team that we saw in the first quarter, the first half against Georgia. And LSU wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, I really don't think it's an issue of Brian Kelly being able to win in Baton Rouge. You look at his record. I mean, that was one of the first night games that he's lost in Baton Rouge. It's more so the fact that Alabama, the past few times, they don't really care about the atmosphere that Death Valley brings. They kind of just go in there and take care of business. And while we had a coaching change, the mentality stayed the same. They prepared way better than what LSU did in the past 2 weeks. They took advantage of the bye week and got their mentality right. And they went in there and they had the full confidence that they were going to go in there and take care of business. And that's exactly what they did. For LSU, you got to take advantage of the bye week. It was a gift, really, especially after the A&M loss, to patch holes, to fix the issues you had on the defensive end. And they really put in, Brian Kelly said, they put in a good game plan for Jalen Milroe, but the lack of execution during the game is what caused them to fail. So how can you take practice reps and turn them into game time reps? Because I'm sure they probably had a good week of practice. Everyone says they have a good week of practice till you actually step on the field for game day. And then it comes down to whether you can take care of business or not. Brian Kelly and this LSU team were not able to. I think Brian Kelly is a good coach at times. I think he struggles to make adjustments, and that was one of the things that they struggled with this game. How do you stop Jalen Milroe in the second half? They weren't able to do it. They didn't make adjustments to do it. They shouldn't have the same game plan. At some point, things got to change during the game if you want to win. LSU going forward, they have one of the best quarterback recruits coming in next year, as long as he stays committed. That is, I know Michigan's making a big push for him in Bryce Underwood, but you're kind of putting all your eggs in one basket in that situation. You're expecting him to come in and change the program. For Brian Kelly, I think the biggest question is, how can you develop him into being a better quarterback once he comes in? And then how can you take advantage of the talent that you have brought in? Because time and time again, he has had talent on the team and they're not able to take care of business. I think you go back a few weeks ago, you look at the Ole Miss game where they played from behind the whole game and then they were able to come back and win in overtime. I think that is one of the games you put on replay and show to your team, this is what you're supposed to do time and time again. And then, of course, you take this Alabama game and really see it more as a lesson to say, we weren't prepared in this situation. We have certain expectations we need to play to, and we can't come up short in games like this if you want to reach our goal. And I'm guessing that would be a national championship. I don't think any other team in the SEC really wouldn't want to reach a national championship, but it comes down to mentality. They didn't have the right mentality going into the game. Like I said, I thought there was a lot of distractions throughout the week. And Alabama proved that they were the better team in this scenario and really just took all the area of the stadium to begin with.
All right, let's move on from Alabama and LSU. Let's talk about another pretty big game that happened this week, and that being Georgia and Ole Miss. And Ole Miss surprisingly upsetting Georgia 28-10. And this is Georgia's first regular season loss to a non-Alabama team since 2020. Y'all know who that team they lost to was in 2020? Any guesses?
2020. That'd be Florida.
Yep, it was Florida. Yep.
Kyle Pitts.
Georgia has lost two regular season games for the first time in a minute. What's wrong with the Bulldogs? What's wrong with this team?
They can't run the ball. I know Trevor Etienne was banged up and hasn't been the same since before that Florida game, but they averaged 1.8 yards per carry in this game. You average 1.8 yards per carry, you will not do anything. I don't care how good your quarterback is. I don't care how many stars you have a wide receiver. I don't care how good your defense is. You have got to be able to run the ball when you're on the road in the SEC. And on 33 rushing attempts, they average 1.8 yards a carry. That is sad. And you look at Kirby Smart's Georgia teams in the past, they've always been able to run the ball. Even if they didn't have a star running back, they've always been able to run the ball, and that set up the passing game. And that's what they were able to do last year. They were able to run the ball and set up the passing game for Carson Beck to get it to his playmakers like Bowers and McConkey. This year, not only do they not have Bowers and not have McConkey, but they can't run the ball. So it puts guys like Carson Beck, who already has some very questionable decision-making over the past couple of weeks, in even a worse situation. And no, the weather wasn't that great in that game as well. That didn't help. But again, you've got to be able to run the ball, especially in those situations on the road in the SEC against a defense who has not been very good at stopping the run. Ole Miss's defense is better this year than we have seen in the past, but they have not stopped the run well. Ole Miss's best game stopping the run was against the Georgia Bulldogs. That is wild. That is a place, Vaughn Hemingway Stadium, that is a place where Kentucky went in and buried Ole Miss a few months ago. And Georgia just went in there and could not move the ball at all. It was wild. Give all the credit to Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin had a fantastic game plan going into that game, not only defensively, but offensively. I do want to shout out, if we're talking about coaching staff in this game, and y'all two will not like this shout out.
Go ahead and do it. Please,
this is Pete Golding's best game, not even a shadow of a doubt, his entire coaching career. And I would this, just say this is a legacy game. And absolutely incredible.
But had it at Bama. We had it at Bama. No, we don't get that Pete Golding.
Oh, man. To talk about this matchup, frankly, it's one of the things you look at on paper and you expect Georgia to just go in and take care of business. And you're already flipping into another game. You're going and watching a different game because at halftime, this game's over. Kirby Smart takes over. Georgia does what Georgia is supposed to do. Well, in this day and age, Georgia doesn't have the same talent gap as they used to. Teams like Ole Miss and other teams throughout the SEC have the same amount of talent as Georgia, and the gap has very much narrowed. You go into a place like Ole Miss and just expect to win. It's not going to happen anymore. Lane Kiffin had a tremendous game plan going into it. He knew what they had to do to take care of business, especially with the number of injuries they had on both sides of the ball. I think this is the biggest thing that we really highlighted going into it was the amount of injuries. That's one thing that I really stopped me from picking Ole Miss in this game because of the amount of injuries. But it really didn't matter when your game plan is set up for your team to succeed. If every man does their job, then the team will succeed. And that is exactly what happened this weekend. I know the game didn't start out like they wanted to. Jetson Dart throwing the pick and then getting hurt. Georgia set it perfectly. They had a 7-0 lead. From there, you got to carry on with that momentum. But really, it's the way Ole Miss responded. But Jackson Dart going out, Ole Miss backup comes in, drives them down the field, and they score a touchdown. They respond. And then Ole Miss defense goes out, and they continue to build on the momentum that their offense just had. And they get the ball back. Jackson Dart comes in. And really, it's just Ole Miss taking control of the game on both sides of the ball. I think the line of scrimmage, Ole Miss's defensive line, did a fantastic job with their gap control, really shutting down the run game, and also pressuring Carson Beck time and time again. Carson Beck, again, made poor decisions when he was pressured. I think that Carson Beck was one of the biggest things for them to lose this game. And it's not just on him because it is a team sport. Let me verify that. But the decisions he made led to his team being in a bad situation. And unfortunately, this is not the Florida game. He's not going to get bailed out again. It didn't happen. You just can't go and expect to win games like this anymore when you commit the amount of turnovers you do. This is not the same Georgia team we saw from a few years ago. You're missing playmakers, especially in the offensive side of the ball. You talk about the loss of Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers to this offense. It put a lot of pressure on guys in the backfield to make plays and to run the ball better. They brought in Trevor Etienne and really it hasn't been a great season for him. Even with the offensive line he's had, they haven't been able to run the ball effectively at times. And the wide receivers, frankly, none have stood out. None have been one of the guys to step up and say, hey, I want to be the wide receiver one. I'm going to be the guy, the go-to guy. I'm going to go and score. I'm going to do things that the offense needs me to do. They don't have that type of guy this year, from what I've seen. I mean, there's still time for people to step up, but that was a game you expected someone to step up in, and everyone just kind of backed down. On the defensive end, Georgia got picked apart across the middle of the field. The secondary, I don't know what happened. Every single time Jetson Dart threw the ball, you knew someone was open in the middle of the field. Jordan Watkins, pre-scoring, both those guys played a fantastic game. I was questionable about Watkins playing. I know he was doubtful going into it, but he ended up playing and he looked like he did not miss a beat. Going back to the Arkansas game, he built off the momentum in that, and Ole Miss certainly has one of the best wide receiver rooms we've seen in a while. Even with Trey Harris being out, it looks like they didn't miss a beat. And that is a big thing. Ole Miss has a few more games to take care of business in. And they do that. I think they have a great shot of making the playoffs. I think that's been one of their goals for a while now. Lane Kiffin definitely has everything in front of him to accomplish that. For Georgia, you got to get right. And you got to get right fast. You had Tennessee at home. You got to take care of business. You cannot afford another loss because another loss likely puts you out of a playoff spot. And that is a crazy thing to talk about, speaking that Georgia rarely ever has one loss during the regular season. It's a different age. But we'll see. We'll see this next Saturday who really wants it and who doesn't.
I'll both touch on Carson Beck struggling, but Mike Bobo's play calling has been absolutely abysmal. Gray knows his time at Auburn was terrible too. But these last few games, watching the play calling, I don't know if he doesn't trust Carson Beck, if he doesn't trust the weapons around him, or if he's just bad, because he watched the Ole Miss game and they're late in the game and they got to score some points and we're throwing swing passes. Well, it, continually, it's like three straight swing passes. Is there like no creativity with the offense? I don't get it. And Carson Beck, when he does push the ball down the field, it looks terrible. It's a bad decision. It's not a good pass. I don't get it. The longest reception this game was from Cash Jones, the running back, for 29 yards. And it's not a lack of speed. Arian Smith has blazing speed. Dylan Bell is very fast. So Georgia, like Nathan said, has to get right. They have the weapons. They have the talent. Can you get the play calling right? And can your quarterback execute the play calls? And thus far, outside of the Alabama game, that second half, they really haven't looked good. Really have not looked good offensively. And the defense, Micah Williams this game, one tackle, first round talent. I was told he's going to go top five by Mel Kiper earlier in this season. He has made zero impact on majority of the games I've watched him play. Jalen Walker, one TFL, another guy supposed to have really good numbers. Didn't feel like he had an effect on the game either. So both sides of the football for Georgia, awful. They have got to get right if they want to win this big game against Tennessee. And they still have Georgia Tech on the schedule too. And Georgia Tech, they're not a slouch. I mean, but let's talk about Georgia Tech before we head out of here, guys. They beat Miami 28-23. Miami has one loss. They have Wake Forest and Syracuse left, plus likely the ACC championship. If Miami wins out and they have one loss or maybe two losses, if they lose the ACC championship, do you put a two-loss or one-loss Miami team in over and a two-loss SEC team?
No, not at all, because that two losses should be six losses. And everybody that's watched Miami this year knows that, and knows that if they were to face one of those 10-2 SEC teams, whether that be a Georgia or a Tennessee or a Texas or an Alabama or even an Ole Miss or Texas A&M, I think any six of those teams would score 89 on Miami minimum. That defense is Swiss cheese. Terrible. Absolutely pathetic. So no, I don't. And I think Miami knows that their bet to secure that spot in the playoff is winning that ACC championship. And I think that's their only way. I think the ACC knows that as well. I think if you're an ACC fan and just kind of a generalized ACC fan, you should be really upset at Georgia Tech right now, because that is your one shot. It's not looking great.
Yeah, Alex, let me correct you for a minute. Miami actually has two losses. One, I guess it didn't count, even though a receiver clearly caught a ball inbounds during the final play of the game. But the ACC, unfortunately, could not save Miami from the crap show that is their defense this time. I mean, abysmal. They could not stop the running game. Haynes King looked like Michael Vick and Lamar Jackson out there. He cannot throw the ball, but when he goes and runs the ball, I mean, Lord, Miami, what are you doing? Hey, Georgia Tech basically said, we're going to just out physical you, and we know you cannot stop it. And then on the defensive end, we're just going to send people at Cam Ward, and eventually he's going to make a mistake. And he did. Miami, this has been a long time coming. If you're a Miami fan, you knew this was going to happen based off your defensive performance every single week before this. It is caught up to you finally. This is what you deserve. Credit to Georgia Tech and Brent Key. Brent Key had a fantastic game plan coming in. He knew what he needed to do. He watched the film, and they took advantage of it. They executed when they needed to. I really thought Georgia Tech was going to blow it late, handing the ball back to Miami. But the defensive performance by Georgia Tech is really what established them the foundation to win this game. Guys getting to Cam Ward, putting pressure on him to make plays in the pocket. He can't do it every single down. When you give him time in the pocket, he will make the correct throw. Cam Ward is a good quarterback, but when you bring pressure at him, he moves around the pocket way too much. He needs to learn to either get the ball out or make a decision and run. He cannot just keep moving around the pocket, because eventually what happened, he ends up getting strip sacked, and that's the game right there. You got to get the ball. You got to make a decision. This is not Madden. This is not college football. It's not college football 25. You're not going to be able to do this video game style offense anymore. Miami cannot slip up anymore. Their strength of schedule has not been what it has needed to be. You can credit Florida State for being absolutely terrible. That's another story that we'll talk about, but you cannot afford another loss. And I don't know who will give Miami another loss. I think Clemson probably has a great opportunity to make the ACC championship. They can handle their business. They're a big question mark too. But how can Miami fix their defensive issues going forward? You got very little time. This should have been something at the beginning of the season. You need to really get under and get a hand. Oh my gosh. I'm losing my mind just talking about Miami. I hate Miami so much. The way they have played this entire season, they've been bailed out time and time again. This has just been a long time coming. I'm so happy that they finally lost. The ACC is a conference is a joke. I'm sorry. South Carolina, this SEC team, South Carolina, who is really not the greatest, they can go over there and easily win that conference right now. I have no doubt in my mind. You can go put Missouri over there and they would compete for it. Yeah,
now Drew would. Pine. Now with Drew Pine. No.
Drew Pine would do it. Drew Pine would do it. I know. But I mean, if we're being honest, I don't really see Miami losing another game. I think they will end up making the playoff, but I don't see them doing anything in the playoff. And it's going to come down to their lack of a defense.
One thing to keep an eye out on, though, is the college football playoff committee did say before the season that they were not going to penalize a team for losing the conference championship enough or as much as they have or would. So if a Miami, SMU, or Clemson has two losses and that second loss is in the ACC championship game, do they penalize them and do they put in a two-loss SEC team that didn't play in the SEC championship? I mean, that's a big thing to look out for going forward is how do they establish that ruling and how does that look going forward, not only this season, but into future seasons? Because if they establish that we're putting in a two-loss SEC team that didn't play in the championship above an ACC team that lost their second game in that championship, then that's the precedent. But if it's the other way around, then they're also saying that precedent. So that is a big thing to look forward to going forward is how the committee rules those kind of games, especially with ACC, maybe even the Big 12 with their teams.
No, for sure.
All right, so all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.